You know what? I like the way we came out. You know, the first couple drives for the defense, I thought were good. I know they got a couple first downs there, but overall, just kept points off the board. The last drive, you know, we unfortunate losses in one-on-one situations, but overall, just from as a group, ones, twos, and threes, just I thought our defense did a really nice job, and then. You know, offensively, really, really cool drive to start the game with that 95-yarder, and then from there, just never looked like we really settled in. But was really excited about the way we ran the ball, and then obviously on defense, thought the way we defended the run was pretty good.
To another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, Justin Mello, still out. Last episode out for Justin Mello, and sitting in the chair in his place today, an old friend from Broadway Sports Media, former host of the Coach's Corner podcast, my friend Ryan Watson. Ryan, how you doing today? Thank you for joining the Music City Audible. Ryan, having minor tech difficulties, no problem. I've also noticed that my camera is flipped yet again. Not sure why that's been happening lately. There we go. We're all good now. Is that better? Is my camera better or not better? Tell me in the comments if my camera is flipped. Ryan's working on his audio. All right, here's what we're going to do today. We are going to recap the Titans preseason week one win, 19-13 win over the San Francisco 49ers. We have good stuff, we have bad stuff, and we have some ugly stuff. So we're going to run through the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Titans preseason win. And apparently my camera doesn't look any different, so I don't know what's happening here. But anyway, doesn't matter. We're actually going to go the ugly, the bad, and the good, because I want to lead up to the good stuff. I got a ton of quotes and sound clips from the press conferences that I want to play to make some of my points here. But the number one overall takeaway for me, Ryan, it looks like you might have fixed your audio. You there? How you doing? No, not yet. All right. We'll be right back with Ryan. No worries. Live TV, folks. The big thing to me that stands out is the Titans won a game 19-13, and the entire fan base is acting like they lost 45-0 in an actual game that mattered. So let's like put a quench on the overreaction panicking that's been happening. I said this throughout the draft process when everyone was talking about the Titans, but I've said it before on the show, and it's something I truly believe in. Not everything has to matter. Not everything has to be an indication of what the future holds. Not everything has to be the biggest reveal. We learned so much. Like, sometimes things just are what they are. Did the Titans' first-team offense play well last night? For the first drive, yes. For the next two drives, no, they didn't. Did Cam Ward struggle with inconsistencies and accuracy issues? Yes. Does that mean Cam Ward is a bust and the Titans are going to win three games again? No. It could mean that. It could mean the Titans... It could mean... it. Here's the thing I always say, Ryan, is that nothing this time of year actually matters, although Robert Saleh had something to say about that.
Well, everything matters.
In the presser last night, which is going to be a new drop. Ryan's got sound. Ryan, how you doing? Thanks for joining us today.
Sorry about that. Yep. This is always fun for me because I'm clearly in my 70s and don't understand technology. So everyone in the live chat, I agree with you. I need a tech guy of my own. To be fair, I do this once a year at this point in time, so I have to dust everything off and get everything out when Justin calls upon me. So I appreciate the invite. Thanks. Hopefully we've got it settled out now.
Yes, it seems like it's working fine now. Nathan Smith wants to know, yo, who is the unk? That would be you, Ryan. No offense on the unk. I don't know if that's offensive, but...
No. I'm in my 40s at this point. Unk is, I think, perfectly fine. I think I saw the 80s, 90s, and everything past 2000, so...
There you go. So Ryan is a former offensive line coach at the college level, offensive coordinator, knows a lot about football. Knows how to watch the game from a coach's point of view and can provide a lot of insight. Was with us at Broadway Sports Media when we launched that. Hosted the Coach's Corner pod. Was part of the Flex podcast with me, Zach Lyons, Flex, and Robert Greenlaw. So Ryan's, me and Ryan go back quite a ways covering the Titans together. And we thought he was the perfect person to fill in for Justin Mello. Not least of all for reasons that you did this literally almost a year ago to the day when the Titans played their first preseason game last year, Cam Ward's debut. And I was out celebrating my wife's birthday, and you and Justin Mello recapped that game. So It was pretty, I felt like you were the perfect person to call on when Melo said he was going to be out for this game. It's almost like an annual thing now. Maybe we try to make that more frequent since we love you so much. But
yeah, I'll get equipment better if that happens, for sure.
Hayden Fiedler says, need Ryan to talk about Carmona and JC. Oh, we will. We absolutely will. Let's tell Ryan about Gary. Sure. Gary, this is unbelievably kind and generous donation from the captain of the Audible Army.
We're keeping a book right now.
With a $100 super chat who says, I'm back. Sorry, I was on vacation. You do not have to apologize, Gary. Hope you didn't spend all your money on vacation so you can still contribute to supporting the show. Just kidding, obviously. We really appreciate it, Gary. Thank you for the donation. We got another super chat that came in, too.
We keeping a book.
This is the sound drop, Ryan. I play a collection of 4 sound drops to celebrate super chats, in case you didn't know. An angry fetus, $5 super chat. Couldn't catch the game. Ward didn't seem to have a good game. Any tendencies on personnel packages worth noting? Heavier on 11, 12, 13, etc. Yes, absolutely. We will get into that as well. Let's start with the ugly, Ryan, because there was a decent amount of ugly here. Maybe more ugly than Titans fans were hoping for. And this is just sort of the rhythm of the offseason is you end the season with a three-win team and the 4th overall pick in the draft. And you're like, man, we suck. But then you hire an exciting new head coach who goes out and gets an established, awesome play caller to be his offensive coordinator, gets a bunch of guys that he's worked with before, goes out and signs a bunch of exciting free agents. And you hear the OTA reports and the training camp reports. And you're like, this team's actually going to be good. We're the worst to first team this year. Get ready for it. And then reality maybe smacks you in the face. But I don't know if it's reality as much as like, we all did it. I'm guilty of it. We let our expectations just creep up too high. And then the reality comes crashing back down. And the other reality is like football is, you know, a game of inches. And sometimes it goes well. And sometimes it goes poorly. The ball bounces your way or it doesn't. A fumble, interception, deflection, whatever. At the end of the day, it's a small margin for error that decides a victory from a loss in the league. And you can be playing not your best and then make the play when it matters and go win a game or whatever. This Titans team's probably going to be up and down throughout the year. They're probably going to get off to a slow start in terms of wins and losses because of a lot of things that I'm about to talk about with Ryan now on the show. Quotes you're going to hear from Robert Saleh that help explain it as well. But the reality is they're installing a new scheme on both sides of the ball. So we can talk about Cam Ward here. I also want to talk about the defense, particularly the pass defense and Cordell Flott and Alante Taylor and these guys that it seems like Titans fans are really panicking over Cordell Flott, which I think is another ridiculous overreaction almost as much as they're panicking on Cam Ward. But let's start with Cam Ward because the first drive, Titans come out, they go 95, 96 yards down the field, score a touchdown. Ward has a couple of nice third down conversions, one to Calvin Ridley on a nice mesh concept over the middle. It's not exactly schemed up because mesh, you got to read the zones of the defense and the coverage and get the ball to the right place. But if the defense does what you want them to do, Calvin Ridley is pretty much the designed read on that play. So that's cool to see that Ridley is getting worked in. This was always the thing with Callahan, right? It was like Ridley wanted to be involved early because it felt him helped him get into the flow of the game. So that was cool to see the Gunnar Helm conversion on a screen play. What? Shout out to Luke Stalker for coordinating a nice screen game, something we did not see from this Titans offense last year. So a few nice plays on the first drive. Then they come out for the second drive, and it was not very good. He had the horrible intentional grounding penalty where he gets thrown backwards and almost took a bad sack where he had enough time to make a decision with the ball. And he didn't. He was trying to make a play. He was big play hunting. He had a couple incompletions that were just pure misses. I counted 3 of them that were just like, you got to hit that one. Quick hitter or a play where he has a clean pocket and he has an open receiver and he just didn't hit them. He also forced the ball to Carnell Tate. I felt like, especially when they came back out for the third drive, I thought twice it was very clearly forced. Actually, I would say all 3 of Carnell Tate's targets were just forces. Yeah. The one at the goal line, Robert Saleh said this morning on a press conference that just wrapped up, that was an RPO, and he probably should have handed it to the back.
He's trying, you know?
Exactly. And he wants to make a play with that toy right now in the preseason immediately. He wants to go show people what the Titans have in Carnell Tate or what he thinks he has in a weapon out there. And so he was like, I'm throwing this to Carnell Tate before the snap, no matter what. And it was really well covered by the, third round rookie, Prysock, the rookie defensive back for the 49ers, who a lot of people liked in the draft process. It was really well covered. And Saleh said Cam should have handed that ball off. His next target, I think, was the out route. The quick out that Cam just missed. And then the third one, he was locked in on Carnell Tate. It was like he ran like sort of like a dig or maybe a deep curl up on the right side. Oh, and Cam maneuvered the pocket well, but then just forced the ball to Tate. He just locked in on him.
Wore the entire time across. Yep.
So I think that that was sort of like it's preseason. You've heard Cam say 7-on-7 is not real football. What do you think he thinks preseason is? Would we rather he take this extremely seriously? Obviously. But it's a growing moment. The terrible, terrible intentional grounding penalty is a mistake that can't happen. But if it's going to happen, I'd rather it happen in the first preseason game where they can go watch the tape and say, you got to be quicker and smarter than this, man. And especially, like, it's not just the negative play. It's you took a pretty, not brutal, but, like, you got swung down to the ground in a preseason game.
That's injured.
We need you healthy, man.
Let's avoid that. Right, yeah, exactly.
So we can look at the misses. I also want to hear Sala speak on Cam Ward. I also have two quotes from Cam talking about what went wrong and how he felt sped up. But here is what happened to you, Ryan. Here are just the three misses. I mean, the first one was like a screen quick hit to the outside. He missed it. Second one was the out to Tate that he just threw outside his body. And the third one was the slant to Aya Manor. I mean, they're all clean pockets. It looks like his feet are set nicely. He just misses these throws. Yeah. Are you concerned about his accuracy at this point?
Well, there's Cam's got a lot of hype, right? And for 2 years now, we're talking about what Cam could be. And the problem is with someone with potential is sometimes if you never reach your potential, then it's just wasted, right? So until Cam shows that consistency, until Cam shows that he can make these plays over and over again and figure stuff out, it's going to be always a question for me. Now, I still believe in it because I think that he's got a lot of great tools. I think he's still the best option for the future for right now. I mean, he's your number one draft pick. You don't go away from that. And any kind of other like thought about that is kind of knee jerk and just you're not going to make it in the NFL if you're switching out a quarterback every game or every year and maybe every year, but like every, you get what I'm saying. So Cam's got a new coaching staff after having a lame duck coaching staff last year, it seems, coming in with a new scheme. It seemed to me watching the preseason, especially on his throws, other than the screens, of course, that he was intentionally trying to be sped up because he's trying to make these decisions quickly. And when you do that, sometimes mechanics get rushed. Sometimes that you don't follow everything through. So he may be a hitch in the elbow, something you can't quite see on film. He's not following through. It's just minor little things. But again, you want to try to speed yourself up in the preseason because let's be honest, if he would have thrown six interceptions in six pass attempts, why would he still be in the game at that point? But it means nothing for the regular season right now. They win five games in a row. Everyone forgets about that. I think I told this last year. I remember years ago, the Kansas City Chiefs before Mahomes, this is a long time ago, they went 0-4 in preseason. Then they end up winning the AFC that year. So like, it's just, and I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but just the preseason can be a lie. First drives can be a lie. You set these up where you script them. They're supposed to go well. There were some really positive things on there. They didn't really ask Cam to do very much. When they wanted to see him do more in the second and third drives, and you can see those. It seemed like he was trying to force things, speed things up, and find Tate at certain points. So a lot of things going on there for him that can contribute. I expect these next games, you'll see him calm down as he gets worked more into the scheme and they start opening things up more because it's still kind of vanilla too. We got to keep that in mind.
Right. That's a great point too. And I also think that something about the preseason that makes it difficult to evaluate is that let's say this had happened, Ryan, if the second two drives had been the first two drives and then Cam had led a 95 yard touchdown drive and called it a night, we would all be leaving like, well, he started slow, but at least he put it together and they went and scored a touchdown. Because he did it the opposite way, we're left with the horrible taste in our mouths of him finishing with like four or five straight incompletions to end his last two drives. And that was not good. He did have a nice conversion to Wandale Robinson on that second drive to pick up a first down before things went sideways. But it's not like he was completely terrible. And the other thing I'll say about that is he only got those drives. And Cam is a guy that we know doesn't get fazed by poor play or negative plays. He doesn't like let it linger. He bounces back strong. He didn't get a chance to bounce back. And he won't get a chance to bounce back in front of all of us until Sunday night, which is more than a week after this game. So he's going to have a lot of time to sit with this performance, understand that he wasn't good enough in this game. But also, the Titans won 19-13. And the other thing that I'll say about all this is that like for all the hand-wringing over the terrible defensive showing and the terrible quarterback play and whatever else is being rung about, the Titans won 19-13. If they are, if they have a season where they're giving up chunk plays, but they're not letting teams in the end zone, and the offense is sporadic and not very consistent from drive to drive, but they are getting touchdowns and Joey Sly is knocking through 58-yard field goals, and they're winning games 19-13, like, sure, it's not the fireworks that we all want and hope to see from our favorite team, but I'd take a 19-13 win over a 38-35 loss any day of the week. So at the end of the day, if the team's winning the football game, now I get it, like the Niners only played their backups, but even when it was like backups versus backups, when it was backups versus backups, the Titans backups won with Will Levis and Hendon Hooker and Mitch Trubisky playing quarterback. The Titans backups dominated the 49ers backups. Ultimately, even if the starters struggled, there was a nice,
I make my joke, but we got to remember these backups are trying, they're fighting for roles. They're fighting for the team. They're out there playing as hard as they can. So it's, you have your practice try hard, comment for a sec, for a reason. These guys are out there competing, and what I liked is I'd watch Titans games in the past, and you get to a certain point, maybe the third quarter, you start mathing out the time and how many drives they have left. You go, oh gosh, this is a 10-point game. They're just not going to win this because they just can't get field goals. They can't get past a certain point. Back when I was coaching, our goals were to, if you can't score, leave the other team inside the 20. And if we're going for the field goal at the very least, but if you can't, we have to punt. So many times the Titans would have their other opposition starting at the 40, the 35, the 45. And that's just not a good game where you're putting that much stress on your defense for that long. So the fact that they were able to make drives that ended in points of any kind is, I'd accept a, let's get them inside the 10 and just play a defensive field position battle. They're actually getting field goals out of it with a guy who's making field goals for once. How fresh is this?
Yes.
So yeah, there's a lot of positives there, even though it is preseason and really doesn't matter, but it is good that they won and showed a competitive fire, that you want that to be there regardless if they're playing, street chalk competition or if they're playing a football game.
Right. And we will get to some of the good there. We've been teasing it out a little bit here, but got to take our first break soon. Oh, this was a good comment too from Hayden Fiedler. Also worth noting, the 49ers essentially had a second team defense all of last year and still won like 12 games. This is a very good football team. That is a great point. All right. I want to listen to Robert Saleh. I want to listen to Cam Ward talk. We're going to do that right on the other side of this first break. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak. All delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha steaks. Because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak. Because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie, I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. My bookie! Welcome back, audio audience. All right, Robert Saleh, what do you think went wrong for Cam Ward tonight?
Yeah, you know what? We'll go back and look, and I've got to talk to Daboll still. It felt like his decisions were right. It just felt like he was a little bit sped up more than he has been in camp. You know, it's first time live bullets. I'm not sure, but it looked like his mechanics were a little bit more sped up than it has been, and which is good because we can go correct it, and which is what the preseason's for. But I'm sure he'll look back at it and see that the protection was pretty good, and he could have went through his process a little bit better.
If we'd had more time between Robert Saleh's presser this morning and this show starting, I would have cut more stuff from Saleh this morning, who was asked by Paul Kaharsky, I believe, do you think last year is bleeding into Cam's process a little bit? Do you think because, like, this is a thing that coaches will tell you all the time, Ryan, I'm sure you have said this if you haven't heard it, that when the live bullets start flying, you fall back on what you know and what you're comfortable with. And Cam has been trying hard to get his footwork right, to be more precise with his mechanics and dial in his accuracy. But this is his first live game action since, if everyone has forgotten, the last play Cam Ward played on, he separated his shoulder. So that was the last play he played in a live contact period of football. So the fact that this is his first action since then, it does take a little bit of time to knock the rust off and get back into the speed of the game and the flow of the game. And he did fall back a little bit into some bad habits that he developed last year. And Robert Saleh said he thinks that is possibly the case, that he did fall back into those habits and that building trust with his teammates takes a little bit of time. And now when he says that, I think the default, at least for me, is to assume he's talking about trust with his receivers, that his receivers will be in the right spot. I think he's talking about trust that the O-line protection is going to hold up, because that's what it felt like to me, that Cam felt like he didn't have as much time as he actually did. And that's what Saleh was referencing there. When he watches the tape, he'll see he had time to actually work his process in the pocket.
Yeah. Having time as a quarterback is a fickle thing, because you think you can have the time, or your internal clock goes off. I mean, not to bring up a sore subject, but Mariota's internal clock was really skewed for a long time after his leg break, and you could see it for multiple seasons afterwards. And I'm not saying that that's going on with Cam Ward, but when you've been shell shocked and been sacked 3,000 times or whatever it was in his NFL career, it starts to play in. So he's got to get to a point to where he can trust this O-line. Trust the new scheme, the new offensive coordinators, and when you're in the foxhole and you're out there in the war and everything's flying around you, you're gonna fall back a little bit on there. So if they weren't telling him to speed up for whatever reason in the scheme, then if he's going back to old habits, then he just needs to go back and watch the film. You know he will, because he's up there at, what, 3 a.m. every day or whatever it is. So I have confidence he's going to see, oh man, I did have time in there. I think two drawbacks where he didn't have probably the proper time in this game. One was early, I think over the left side, right up the middle. And that was not ideal. That might've been the intentional grounding. And then later on, there was one where he had to shift earlier than I think he wanted to. I haven't seen the All-22. So forgive me, anybody who's sticklers about accuracy. I apologize. I'm just going off my memory from laying on the couch at 9 p.m. last night. So, but yeah, he definitely looks beat up. Hopefully he's not going back into old habits, and hopefully he can find a way to review and see he had more time than he did.
And if there's any coach I trust right now to, like, make sure he breaks those old habits and get him right, it's Brian Daboll, who's done the same thing with Daniel Jones, and Daniel Jones ended up looking pretty dang good that first year Daboll was in New York. He did it with Josh Allen, bringing him along from a raw college prospect. And another thing Saleh said this morning was that they didn't call a single pass play last night that they haven't run in practice. And, like, Ryan, again, from your experience, you can tell us that, like, this is sort of an unknown thing maybe for the general fan, but, like, a lot of the plays that get run on a Sunday in the NFL are stuff that they've installed that week, or they're variations or evolutions of what they've been running throughout training camp, which are, like, sort of the base fundamental principles of the offense. But this was different. This is their, they didn't install anything on Wednesday and say, go run it on Thursday or whatever. They were running plays that they've run all camp. And Saleh said that he's been executing them flawlessly in camp. But once the live bullets started flying again, he got sped up a little bit. He fell back into some old habits. Cam, did you feel like you were sped up in this game?
Maybe a little bit, especially getting back out there. But I seen everything. I was being able to move linebackers the way I wanted to, know each and every coverage you're getting to. So it was really just, you know, me slowing down, then, you know, putting the ball where it needs to go.
I think what's important here is there's a difference between Cam struggling because he's freezing in the pocket or taking too long, which I think is a worse problem to have. Holding the ball too long is worse than being sped up. It's harder to fix. There's a difference between that and Cam read the plays correctly. He assessed the coverages correctly. He made the right decisions with where to go with the ball. The only exception decision-making-wise was when he decided to try to make a play and ended up doing the intentional grounding, which could have just as easily been a fumble, turnover, or an interception. Like, that was a disaster play. Catastrophe in the making. The Titans are lucky that all it resulted in was an intentional grounding. And then he was able to pick up most of the yardage he lost on the next play with a nice little strike to Wandale. So, all in all, it could have been much worse than it was, but I also think it is notable that the areas Cam was struggling in were sort of mechanical efficiency and speed with his process, as opposed to struggling to read the coverage, struggling to diagnose the routes against the coverage, going through his progressions, finding the right player to get the ball to. Like, he was doing the right things process-wise from that standpoint. It really was just about putting the ball where it needs to go on those handful of misses that he had.
And something I want to point out, sped up. Sped up doesn't mean always I'm getting the ball and I'm throwing it as soon as I get it. That's not what it means to speed up. Sped up also means I'm speeding through my mechanics trying to make this throw. Like, think about this, like you're going through life, and if you've ever played pickup basketball like I tried to a couple weeks ago, and you said, oh, I'm open for a three, and you shoot and it goes 3 feet over the backboard, which may or may not have happened to me, because I sped up everything because I was wide open. I said, oh. So it wasn't that I like sat there and rushed my shot or rushed into my shot. It was once the shot started going, I forgot it. Like my brain went blah. But that, you know, so Cam, when we're saying sped up, he could be speeding up any part of his mechanics with the overthrow, because like when you're throwing a football, you do it so many times, so it becomes second nature to you, so that you don't have to worry about your mechanics. And if he's been asked to change things, he's asked to update things, go through some things, there could be a lot of things going on, and you can resort to bad habits in those situations once you get pressured. So just wanted to point that out, that sped up doesn't also mean high throw. It means once I go through my throwing progression, I'm speeding up my mechanics a little too much.
Right. And I don't even think he really had that big of a footwork issue last night, which is a good sign overall too. And he also spoke about areas that he thought the offense succeeded in and areas they thought they could improve. For succeeded in, I don't have the clip, but he just went on and on about how well the offensive line played, which we're going to get to in a few minutes here. When he changed it to what he can do better, this is what he had to say.
I think we got to continue to clean up things in the pass game with myself, with the receivers, seeing eye to eye. I got to continue to give them better chances, you know, making plays. And I think once we get that, you know, we'll be really good.
He's got to give them better chances. He's got to put the ball in the right spot. He knows came up short in this game. And I think that is also pretty important. And the last thing on the quarterbacks here, Ryan, is that as much as Cam Ward struggled in this game, he was far and away the best Titans quarterback who played last night. I think that is still also notable, and it showed up. I mean, Trubisky didn't play much. He did go 2 for 3 for 23 yards, had a pretty nice 89.6 QB rating, but too small of a sample size and not asked to do anything really to say that he was better than Cam. Levis was terrible. Levis went 3 for 8, 42 yards, took 3 sacks, as many completions as sacks taken, had a horrible moon ball that should have been intercepted that Bryce Oliver somehow almost came down with, arm punt situation there. The best Will Levis looked was when Brian Daboll, excuse me.
Yeah, so it's Daboll. D like table.
Yes, I know how to say it. Thank you. Brian Daboll called those quarterback draws. Like, that was the best Will Levis looked in the whole game. And then Hendon Hooker coming in at the very end, just to hand it off and salt away the victory. But I do think that's also notable. Like, as much as we're coming out of this game critiquing Cam, it's because we have very high expectations for him. We're holding him to a high standard, which we should be doing. Sure. You know, and the coaching staff should be doing, and the team should be doing, but he was still far and away the best quarterback that played for the Titans last night, and that matters to me a little bit.
Definitely.
All right, let's talk about the defense and Cordell Flott while we're on the ugly here, because Cordell Flott got cooked a little bit by Dejon Stribling in this game, or Dazon Stribling. I'm not exactly sure how to say his first name, but Stribling, who is he the best rookie wide receiver in this draft? Ryan, Carnell Tate looked terrible last night. 0 catches for 0 yards. Sorry, that's slightly facetious.
Context matters sometimes.
Context does matter. Stribling was clearly the focal point of their passing game for the first half last night. 7 catches, 63 yards, I think. But anyway, the Titans gave up a lot of big catches, a lot of big completions. What's the deal with this coverage? Do these cornerbacks absolutely suck? No. It goes back to something I was talking about earlier this week. I played a quote on the show by Jair Brown, 49ers safety, who talked about how Raheem Morris has stripped away some of the things that were making the scheme difficult and complex and allowing the players to just play football. Robert Saleh's defense is built around a couple of principles. You're going to rush four, you're going to try to get pressure with four, and the guys behind that four are going to play, fall into a zone, and they got to cover their zones. I'm going to read you guys an excerpt from Stoney Keeley's thoughts. Sent this out as a free article last night in Stack in the Inbox. If you're not subscribed to Stoney and Stack in the Inbox, you're missing out on a lot of great Titans insight. But this is what Stoney had to say. And rather than just like parrot this as my own take, I'm going to read it verbatim exactly what Stoney wrote. I think the defense is just going to look funky for us. Sorry, let me start over. I think the defense is just going to look funky to us for quite some time. It's such a stark contrast from Denard Wilson's, we may just have to get used to how it looks. They want to stick to that four-man front and run zone coverages behind it. It may look wonky when four guys get after the quarterback and everyone else drops out of the frame on the television, but that's how it functions. Four men rush, everyone else drops, and then works back to the play as needed. It's that simple. The weakness of this defense is that if your four-man front doesn't get home, quarterbacks can sit back and carve up the weak spots between the zones with those digs and other in-breaking routes. We saw San Francisco do that tonight. Such an aggressive front is also susceptible against the run, which we saw on a few plays tonight too. If you want to see how truly bad it can get, go watch how the Seattle Seahawks carved up Saleh's defense in the playoffs last year. Where Saleh likes to change things up, notably, is on third down, where we saw some DB blitzes and a mugged up linebacker or two, the play where Cody Barton kind of rushed on a stunt from the inside and completely whiffed on his attempt to tackle, Curtis Rourke? Is that his name? Curtis Rourke comes to mind as a third down where they did blitz a linebacker. That's where the Titans defense bowed up tonight. And I think it's how this defense will live. The quintessential bend but don't break unit. It's as personnel proof a scheme as I've studied, but that also doesn't mean you can just take guys like you and me off of our fat asses and put them on the field and it'll run just fine. What got the 49ers in trouble down the stretch last year is the injury bug. If you don't have the horses to pressure the quarterback and stop the run, it can obviously have an exponential impact on the rest of the defense. That's where I felt like the first team was all right and will only get better with time and getting the full vision of the personnel group together. So, big picture-wise, the reason I never felt truly panicked about how this game went sideways is because I think the first quarter or so painted an accurate depiction of what we've thought this team would be for a few weeks now. A team that's going to play sound schematic defense and run the ball on offense while the chemistry develops in the passing game on both sides of the ball, and that's what I saw tonight. So, there's a few takeaways for me here. First of all, like, I want to talk about the fact that they're installing a new scheme and how complex and difficult that can be to pick up. But I also think the idea that we're going to watch a defense that is completely smothering wide receivers and knocking down passes is simply not the style of defense that Robert Saleh plays. It is a very zone-heavy defense that will open up holes in that zone. And the thing that these players have to understand is how to communicate and move as a unit and cover all those zones with the proper spacing, and they aren't there yet. And what's even more notable to me, Ryan, is this is the play caller who knows how to attack this defense better than anyone in the league. And Clint Kubiak with the Seahawks last year spent time in the Shanahan/McVay system too, and is one of the guys that knows how to carve up this defense, as you saw in the playoffs. But that is so good for teaching these players the vulnerabilities in their scheme. Because you can go out there and practice against Titans offense every day for 8 days in a row, and at a certain point, there's diminishing returns to that, to learning where your weaknesses are and how to cover them. Then you go up against an offense that knows exactly how to attack your weaknesses. You're going to get exposed really quick. You're going to have a lot of really good film to go back and watch and be like, oh, so when the route combination is this, I need to get here. I need to have this depth. I need to be this far away from my teammate or this. That kind of stuff is the kind of stuff that you can only learn with time. And it's why I think this Titans defense could be kind of a bad unit down to down for the first half of this season before they really start to pick up the scheme and it starts to click and they start to gel. But it also was reflected in last night's game that while they may give up yards between the 20s, when they get on third down, they're going to change things up and try to disrupt these quarterbacks. When they get in the red zone, this defense did bow up. They gave up, the first team defense gave up one touchdown on three drives. And that the other two drives were great. And the rest of the team, you know, the second, third, whatever units gave up 6 points over the rest of the game. So at the end of the day, the defense did their job. Even if it looked like Cordell Flott was getting cooked by Dazon Stribling, even if it looked like they were giving up chunk plays in the passing game, I mean, they had, like I said, the blitz call on that third down was perfectly called and almost perfectly executed. If Cody Barton hadn't been avoiding hitting quarterbacks for the last month, maybe he makes that tackle. And that's the whole point of preseason and knocking off the rust. So I have a quote I want to play from Salah on this, Ryan, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. But Salah, just sort of emphasizing the fact that this is a young team learning how to play in a new scheme.
One, I do think we're really, really young, and I do think these guys need some game action, as you saw. Like, we can't get our offense enough reps. Cam can't get enough reps. And then same thing with defense. You know, on the secondary, we're implementing a whole new system, and, you know, they've got to be able to they've got to feel it in live bullets. They've got to feel the angles. They've got to feel the tackling. They've got to feel the route concepts and the spatial and the distribution that we operate with. So, you know, we need these reps in all three phases and all three groups.
They need to feel the spacing and the distribution that they're supposed to play with defending these concepts. Ryan, you have experience, I'm sure, installing schemes with new players. Talk about some of the challenges there and what you saw from the Titans defense last night.
Well, the thing with installing a new scheme, especially defensively, is that if you've gone from one style that can be considered high tempo or man heavy or some form of aggressive, especially in the back end with coverage, it can be a little difficult because when you go to more of a zone look, you're relying on not just your area. You're going to cover your area, but you're also assuming that everybody else is covering their area. So you have to work in tandem. So it's more, it's like, you have to rely that everyone's going to be where they're supposed to be. So you're relating these, you're learning something new. Plus the majority of your reps you've gotten on this new scheme has been against your own team. And you can say that it shouldn't matter, but you practice against these guys, these routes, these plays every day for all of practice. You're going to end up looking better against your own team. And so when I hear reports out of camp that all the defense killed the offense, like, well, that's kind of supposed to happen a lot. Almost every defensive one-on-one scheme, almost all are skewed to the defensive player, pass pro, for example. But you're sitting here running in practice, you're seeing the same routes, same whatever. So you're able to kind of grasp, oh, I get this, you know, but then you get into a game where you have to now read and react and you have no clue what's coming and you don't see any of this stuff. You're not used to this player. You've never seen this rookie receiver who just got drafted, who's torturing you before. Like it's just, there's a lot going on, especially early. And again, I'd rather this happen now in the preseason in a game you won 19-13 and overall was bend but don't break, which it's going to be frustrating to watch because I don't necessarily love it either. But at the same time, you keep teams out of the red zone, or once they get close to the red zone, you don't let them score touchdowns. And if you can keep teams to within striking distance for your offense, that's the ideal goal. So it's just going to take some time for them to learn the scheme, learn the new voices that are telling them the scheme and the thought process behind it. You've got to get out of your preconceived notions about zone because they may have a different way they want you to run zone. So it's all those things kind of combine into one where we're at the first game, you're going to see some hiccups.
Yeah. And I think we saw those hiccups, and I think it's going to be great that they're going to get to do this multiple times. I love that there are three series of joint practices before these preseason games. See how they look against Seattle, which is a similar offense. Their new offensive coordinator came from Shanahan. I think he spent like 8 years with the Niners before getting hired in Seattle with the departure of Clint Kubiak. So they're going to see some similar stuff next week in joint practice and in the game next week. And I think that's great. They need to see this stuff because this is what they're worst at right now. They don't need to see more Dable-style offensive route concepts because they've gotten a lot of work against those. So this is great. And then the last week, they get Ben Johnson, another top play caller in the NFL. A great last preseason week to really, you know, iron out those last deficiencies. Like I said, I do think this defense is going to struggle to contain big plays and offensive, you know, production over the first half of the season as they continue to learn to work together. But if they can bow up in the red zone, that's really all that matters. Keep offenses out of the end zone. It's not about allowing the fewest yards or the lowest completion percentage or whatever. Also, generate turnovers will make a big deal as well. And zone coverage really allows defensive backs to read quarterback's eyes and jump those passing lanes a lot more than man coverage does. Plus, you didn't have John Franklin Myers out there and Jeffrey Simmons playing together. You didn't have Jacob Martin playing. So you're relying on guys that aren't necessarily your best unit to get after the quarterback. Hopefully those guys are going to miss snaps and games this year too. Like everybody misses time in the NFL. But when you're fully healthy, let's see what this looks like, because that front four getting that kind of pressure that Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers should be able to get next to each other changes everything for the back end. And we didn't get to see that version of it. So I think that's a lot of ugly, Ryan. We spent 38 minutes talking about the ugly here. I promise you guys,
in a game that they won.
which is amazing. I promise you guys we have some good also. We're going to hit the bad quickly because I actually don't really have that much bad. It's more really just like the good and the ugly. But we're going to take our second break and we'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. Audio audience, we decided during the break that we're going to skip the bad and go straight to the good because we kind of covered all the bad when we talked about the ugly. To transition us to the positive side of things, I'm going to play another Robert Saleh quote here. This is talking about, he was basically asked, like, are you worried that your starting defense and your starting offense was going up against backups and didn't dominate and didn't look like they're, could a person who knows nothing about either team have watched last night's game and said, oh, the Titans are clearly the ones playing their starters and the Niners are clearly the ones playing their backups? I think if you ask somebody that, they would have said the opposite. They would have said, oh yeah, Curtis Rourke, he's clearly the one starting quarterback playing tonight. That's neither here nor there. But here's how Saleh responded to that question of if he is concerned about the team's performance.
You know, I'd love to tell you no concern, but it's definitely there's a sense of urgency with regards to making sure that we get it fixed and we continue to put our guys in those situations in practice so that we can continue to get that work. But we'll never panic, but urgency will always be high.
If you haven't watched Saleh's presser from last night, you out there, listener, I encourage you to do so. It made me feel a lot better about the game. It really puts it into perspective. Again, everything we just talked about, that Ryan will watch it later, that this is a preseason game that doesn't matter. It's their first action together as a team ever. And so, yeah, he'd love to say you're not concerned, but he will tell us the urgency is high. Like, yes, it wasn't our best showing, but we also have 3 weeks to get this stuff right. And we're going to try because we understand the urgency. I just thought he said all the right things. And that to me was one of the goods that came out of the game. Saleh as a head coach. I'll say this, Ryan, he's got aura on the sideline. Like he just looks like a head coach should look, standing on the sideline, got the headset on, throwing the challenge flag, hyping up Joey Sly after he made the 58-yarder. I'll talk more about that in a second.
Doesn't look like it's too much for him. Like nothing. It doesn't look like he's going to get overwhelmed. And if it does, it doesn't look like you're going to be able to read it on his face. I mean, that's what I like about him.
And that, I think, goes for the entire coaching staff, which brings me to my first kind of boring, kind of cop-out thing that I want to file under the good category. The Titans, well, you know what? I'm not going to explain it. Let's let Robert Saleh explain it because he put it perfectly and I literally could not have said it better myself.
You know, I thought the challenge, I thought the operation in the booth for the challenge that we had, I thought it was good. I thought it was sound. It was close, but obviously we lost that one, but it was pretty close. And then, but overall the communication, you know, in preseason, not having too many on the field is a win, not having 10 on the field is a win in a preseason. So I thought the communication from the sideline, I don't think we had any illegal formation today. I thought our procedure and on offense was pretty good. Defensively, it felt like we played clean ball. We were gap sound and special teams wise, I thought we did a really nice job. So overall, as an organization, I thought the operation was pretty clean.
That's an underrated thing that came out of this game. The operation was extremely clean. The professionalism exhibited by the coaching staff, we've been here, we've done this before, we know how to get our units on and off the field, communicate substitutions, never ended up with 10 guys or 12 guys on the field at any point in time, never ended up with too many in the huddle on offense, zero false starts, zero delay of game, zero illegal formations. Like, that's the kind of stuff that was plaguing Brian Callahan's tenure, was the little details of being a professional. And this team did not exhibit any of those signs last night. They've had a few false start issues throughout camp, but they were very clean in last Friday night's scrimmage at Nissan Stadium. Basically no penalties on the offense. And they were very clean again last night. There were a couple of little penalties here and there, like defensive holding a couple of times. But for the most part, they were very clean as a team. And that is something that can stick from preseason to the regular season. They don't have to go back and say, they don't have to waste time this week figuring out their substitution process or getting the special teams kicking unit on the field or whatever. So that, I think, it's not being talked about at all because it didn't stand out as a glaring issue. It's a huge positive coming out of last night.
Especially reflected against what you, and I may be misremembering this from PTSD, so apologies if I did, but from the Callahan regime, that it just seemed like every week there was some kind of miscommunications. There was people not getting on the field. There was delay of game penalties. There was lots of false starts, lots of just ticky-tack stuff. Every single game, you're just like, oh, we're shooting ourselves in the foot again, especially on offense. So, I mean, it's nice to see that if you can have organization that starts at the top, That's what I missed. I think that's what I missed most about Vrabel being gone is that he seemed to always have his ducks in a row for a lot of stuff, not everything, but for a lot of stuff. And he at least was, what I loved about him was he was thinking about that next level of stuff all the time, with rules of the game, with situational things. So it's nice to have that feeling back from at least one preseason game. It seems like we're trending back in that direction for the Titans.
Yeah, absolutely. That level of professionalism where you find the edges that don't necessarily exist on the field with your players, but just the operational standpoint of the game. So really nice to see a clean performance from that standpoint, from this coaching staff that, you know, some people loved the coaching staff the Titans put together. Some people, particularly in the New York market, who had close experiences with Robert Saleh, criticized the coaching staff that they've put together here. But I think we saw good signs of what they can do, again, from a professionalism standpoint last night. Ryan, my next big item in the good category, and in fact, this was great. This wasn't just good.
Yep.
And this is one of the primary reasons you're here to help talk about this. Ryan, I'm calling it. The fight is over. The right guard position battle is wrapped up. Now, it's not actually technically wrapped up. Like, they're going to keep letting these guys compete. Mm-hmm. But if anybody watched the game last night, if you have eyes and you're able to compare the play that you saw from Fernando Carmona, Cordell Volson, and Jackson Slater, never mind the order that they came out in, which was the most telling thing of all, just from a play standpoint, Carmona, clearly the best right guard on the field last night. Titans fifth-round rookie Fernando Carmona is your starting right guard. It couldn't have resulted in a better person winning this job for the sake of roster construction. You got a rookie on a four-year, fifth-round pick contract who is now going to go step into the starting role. Now, again, he has to continue to stake his claim to this position. He has to continue to win every single day or he might be replaced. But Cordell Volson was atrocious last night. He was one of the worst offensive linemen to play for the Titans. Him and Austin Deculus were both getting whooped. Austin Deculus, how many times did he get whooped right off the snap when he was out there at left tackle? Like three plays in a row, it felt like. Whoever that rookie was for San Francisco just went, got right to the quarterback. Maybe not a rookie. I can't remember exactly who it was. I don't cover the 49ers, guys. But the point is, Fernando Carmona has wrapped up the starting right guard job as far as I'm concerned. Robert Saleh and company may not call it yet. I'm calling it. It's over.
He looked so daggum good. In fact, I was late to the preseason game getting started because my daughter had her varsity soccer game and we were hustling back. So I had to go back and rewind. So I kind of missed that Carmona was starting for whatever reason. I think it just slipped my mind or I didn't hear it. So I'm sitting there watching the game going, man, this right side is just dominating these run plays. I said, who? And then I think the announcer said Carmona. I went, oh my God, he is starting. And I kind of had, and then I rewound the entire game to go back from the start. Cause I was like, now I really wouldn't go watch him. He was so convincing to me that I just brushed him off as another starter NFL experienced guy that was in there from the start. Like, so that was my first impression, was like, wow, not just he looks good. This dude looks great in there. He looks very comfortable. And my thing too, with offensive line, especially if you're going to be one of those interior sets, is that you got to be a little bit of a bastard. You got to be a little bit of a heavy handed dude that can come off the ball and have some violence to you. And I thought that's what I saw in his hand punches, his movements, his coming, you know, whether he was taking a one-on-one block, double team, or he was blocking down to help and climb to backer. I thought everything had an initial violence to it. I think everything controlled violence, because I've seen offensive linemen who are violent and just out there for no reason and get penalties and all this kind of stuff. I thought he's very controlled. His footwork was chef's kiss. I really thought he looked so good, especially when you were talking about double, because people can say, oh, double teams are easy because you got two on one. No, because you're reading another level behind you. It's a timing thing. There's a trust thing with your guy next to you. You have to get a good initial push, which should happen with two on one. But then from there, you got to have proper footwork. You've seen Jeffrey Simmons split so many double teams over the past. It's if you've got a talented defensive lineman over there that can do those things, you've got to. I thought he would covered and released well on everything. I don't have specific plays or anything. I don't know if you've got clips, but man, he was moving. I love this comment. He was moving bodies. I was going to say he was moving people, but yes, there was a clear, like when you watch an offensive line come off the ball and run plays to an NFL defense, and they are constantly throughout the first few drives moving them 3 yards off the ball, which I may be exaggerating a tad, but there was clear movement that they were winning that line of scrimmage. Pollard, Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry would have loved these this movement. Whoever your running back is, Spears looked fantastic last night too.
Yeah,
you have that kind of movement. Your running backs should look good. They should be able to hit those holes. They should be able to make those reads. The touchdown early on to Pollard was a push zone where they were able to work the defense, and the Pollard cut back underneath it. They just worked everything to the right. Nobody was able to break the line. Nobody was making anything cross back or anything. So it was very beautiful. Been long winded there, but Carmona, man, was fantastic. And I really thought he and Latham played really well together. And I always wondered if some of Latham's problems were he's learning, he's having to do all this. He doesn't necessarily have the strongest, you know, possible next to him. Maybe he's not trusting. I don't know what it is, but they looked really good last night together. I thought Latham actually looked pretty good in pass pro, which was, I went, noted. He looks like for a preseason game, again, he looked pretty good. But Carmona is definitely the big winner here for me. And I think I texted you that last night. I think during the game, I was texting you about Carmona because I just was like, man, I really enjoy what I'm watching out of that. And let me just pause here because so many offensive line draft picks the Titans have gotten wrong in the past 5-6 year drafts, whatever it is. There's been so many misses or they weren't quite as good as you thought they were going to be. And yeah, I am including Latham in that because he didn't come out and do exactly what I thought he was going to do immediately. Hopefully he's coming back around. But so many misses on tackles, it just seems like they were getting so much stuff wrong. They weren't hitting. It's a good feeling that they may have finally hit on a late round, a fifth round draft pick that's going to be a potential starter all year for you. And the fact that he looked that good that early, no doubt, didn't seem like he was confusing anything. He just knew he was like a guided missile. He knew exactly where he was going. Seemed like he knew his plays, didn't seem in hesitation. I can't say enough. I can talk for 5 more minutes. I really loved him, but I'm going to stop because I've gone too much about him.
I do want to see him go up against non-backups. I think that this was his first test. Like, can you function in the offense?
But if you're going against backups, I expect you to look like you're going against backups. How many Titans starters have we seen in the past go backups? You're like, oh God, that looked bad.
Yes.
He looked like he should. He looked like he was dominating people that were backups. Great. That's what I want out of my starting offensive linemen.
Exactly.
Lesser people look like they're lesser.
Prove that you are in a class above the backups that you're playing against, and that's exactly what he did. It's going to be a real test next week going up against Seattle, one of the most, you know, deepest and most ferocious defensive lines outside of Houston, I think, in the NFL. Chicago, not as much of a challenge, but that is a NFL defensive line, even if they're not one of the top ones in the league. I thought the entire first team offensive line played well. J.C. Latham looked like there's nothing bad you can say about how Latham played. I thought Dan Moore was solid last night. I saw Latham getting out blocking on, I think, the screen to Gunnar Helm where
he
went for
good.
Like 16 yards and Latham out in space executing the block.
A little holding, but if you're not holding as an offensive lineman, you're not really truly trying.
There you go. And Ryan would know more than anybody. I want to play Robert Saleh talking about Fernando Carmona. First, he talked about the fact that he played well, and then Jim Wyatt followed up and said, what has he done well that caught your attention that allowed him to get this opportunity? And Saleh said this.
You know, he's steady. You know, he's very smart. He knows what to do. He communicates well. He executes. He's strong in there, so he's not getting pushed around. And, you know, you just want a steady guy. You know, I always tell old linemen, just die a slow death. And you'll play a long time, and you know he's doing a great job just putting himself in position to be successful.
What do you think about that line, Ryan? Just die a slow death and you'll be successful.
I love it. He's going to be a good. I just will say this. I think his pressers are going to be fun all year. But you just got to find a way to stick around, man, and just do your job and do it. You don't necessarily the longer an offensive lineman. I've seen so many offensive linemen in the NFL that are considered good offensive linemen just because they don't make mistakes. So if you're able to just go in there and do your job and not make mistakes, then here's the thing. How often do we actually ever talk about offensive line unless they're doing something bad? It's very rare. So the fact that we're sitting here, maybe it's because we didn't have a whole lot of else positive to look at for the Titans, but the fact that we're sitting here talking about a positive about offensive line, that makes me giddy because normally you don't hear about them. And as an offensive lineman, if my name was never called, awesome. That means I did my job. So like if right. No one's ever saying, you know, that number 64 or whatever, yeah, it was terrible. Look at that. I mean, and that's the thing too, is they could be perfect all game and they give up 3 bad plays out of 40. They've considered having a bad night. That's never made sense to me, but I get it. I get where the thought process is coming from. But the fact that you can have your name just kind of out there and no one's talking about you and you're just like, yeah, he's doing a good job. That means you're really doing a good job as an offensive lineman.
And I think when they go watch the film of this as a team, probably what they're doing like right now as we speak, because they're back on the practice field, by the way. Titans will be practicing again tomorrow out at Vanderbilt Sports Health Performance Training Complex Center, whatever the hell they named that new the training facility now. They'll be back on the field on Saturday. So I'm sure today they're watching the film of this. They're going to have a bunch of fun putting on screen Carmona pancaking people. I mean, he was flattening guys. It was awesome to watch. Let's hear from Carmona, because let's give him some just like a spotlight to talk on this show here. This was him describing his reaction to finding out yesterday morning that he would be starting last night's game.
Yeah, excitement like anything. I mean, as competitors, you want to be that guy who goes out there. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you just got to go out there and do your thing.
He even looks obviously, like a lineman. I love it.
He does, doesn't he? And you know what is hilarious about that? First of all, he talked about his like what he wants to do well is what he wants to be known for is playing violent. Like that's the thing he wants to be known for. And you talked about how he looks like he has that controlled violence. The other thing he was asked, when did you shave your head? Because if you guys remember like what he looked like around draft time, he had his long curly hair that was like bouncing around on his head. He said, but right before training camp, I shaved my head. You know what, Ryan? We got bald Sala, mm-hmm. bald Dable, bald Bradley, bald Brasillo. I bet Carmona was like, if I shave my head, I'm going to have a way better chance to earn the favor of this coaching staff and win a starting job because we'll all be in the bald club together.
Any edge you can get, man, I'm telling you. But no, he looks like a pancake eater. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, he does. So it's fun to hear from him. And I think that the offensive line played well. Any other notes on the offensive line? I mean, I don't think that...
I mentioned Latham. I thought, you know, as far as the other offensive linemen that were out there, they're starting that I saw, like, I didn't think Schlottman was that bad. I really don't. I think that center is such a hard thing because you're having to do so much communication. You're having to do so much around. It's easy to say, oh, they missed that one block. They're terrible or whatever. But to me, they're doing so much communication. If you're organizing everybody up there and you're able to get to your reach blocks, you're able to get to your climbs, which I thought, especially in that first series that I went back and watched a few times, I thought he was doing a very good job pre-snap communication. So I think there's some positives there. It pales in comparison to Carmona, of course. And again, Latham, man, I just couldn't be happier that he's better than last year. And that's all I think I saw in the comments too. So not to steal thunder. I really agree that as long as he's better than last year, that's good enough for me being the right tackle there. Dan Moore being serviceable was definitely a good surprise, especially after last year, you know, having some concerns there would not looking to seriously attack that as a replacement in the offseason in any way, shape, or form. It's like, okay, I guess we're just going to go with Dan Moore again. But the fact that he looked very comfortable was concerning. Skoronski, you know, he gave up a couple batters. But again, I'll go back to my shorter – there's a smaller – window of like thing here. You would rather him been dominant like Carmona was, and that's I think what's kind of playing against. I don't think he was necessarily terrible. I just don't think he was good either, and that's being the one who was supposed to be, again, I saw this in the comments and I agree, the one who's supposed to be your stable offensive lineman coming back. It's kind of concerning to see, but maybe he just had an off day and maybe once they get going, because if that interior can gel between the right to the left guard, including the center, then you've got a lot of your run game stuff already taken care of between their communication, between their handoffs, their down blocks, their wraps, everything. If that all is going well, and I did see him rap on the touchdown for the cutback. So that he was getting out and moving well. So I don't think there's any injury stuff there. But that's kind of my impression of the starting offensive line. And then my impression of everything after the starting offensive line was, let's just hope no one gets injured.
Yeah, right. I did think Austin Deculus was terrible. I didn't notice Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon giving up much, but I'll need to rewatch the All-22 to really see how he played. I do want to note on the play that Skoronski got run through by this rookie D lineman that everyone on social media and 49ers fans are going crazy about. And you are in Nashville, Ryan. So you got to watch, I'm assuming, the actual Titans local broadcast last night. I'm out here in Dallas. I had to watch the national broadcast, which whenever the national broadcast is happening in a preseason game, if you don't know, because most of you guys probably live in Nashville, they play the home team commentators. So I had to watch the game last night with the Niners commentators, which are maybe some of the most biased guys I've ever heard commentate an NFL game. I get it. Preseason commentators are going to be biased because they are literally broadcasting for the home crowd. But there is a difference between being biased towards your team and what the Niners announcers were doing, which was literally, it took them until Jalen Harrell got hurt for them to mention a Titans defender by name, outside of when they were highlighting like, oh, Jeffrey Simmons is really good in the very beginning of the game. Like, passes gets broken up or completed. A tackle gets made, a quarterback gets pressured. Not one time did these guys say, Oh, and a really nice catch there by Stribling with flaw in coverage or with a young player. Like, come on. You were on NFL Network last night. You got to know going into that game that you are the NFL Network broadcast and that your broadcast is not just going to be shown in the Bay Area. It's going to be shown nationwide to everyone outside of Nashville. You just got to do a better job. So, excuse my rant, but that was extremely frustrating for me. Anyway, they were really pumping up this defensive tackle who ran through Skoronski. If you go back and watch that play again, there's a miscommunication somewhere on the line because Skoronski gets distracted by the other interior rusher that's coming at him, which causes him to not really be able to anchor against that tackle, or yeah, the tackle that's running through his chest as he's like trying to block two guys at once. So it looks a lot worse on one watch with a non-nuanced perspective than it actually was. Like, Peter Skoronski didn't get run through. Him and his teammates got messed up somewhere. Somebody didn't pick up the right guy, and he was trying to save the play. Also, that play didn't even count because there was a penalty on the defense, so who cares?
Yeah, it's like, it's always funny to me, like, when everyone says, oh, this corner in the past, and not to bring up a former Titan, but this corner blew up Derrick Henry. Almost every time they'd show the highlight, he was either jumping over a pile and just landed and got hit, or someone was around his legs and he got hit, or he was making a cut and it was off balance and got hit. Those are the only times you can catch Derrick Henry. So I say that to relate back to this situation with Skoronski is doing something where he's not centered, he's not anchored, he's not taking that going on. But yeah, it looked like it was a miscommunication on that one play. And again, this is what I'm talking about. One play. It didn't even count as an offensive lineman, and that in your whole game, you're terrible.
Right.
Again, I don't think he was great, but I don't think he was that bad. And you take that one play out of it, and I would borderline say he was good. Like, it's just one of those things where I'm not as concerned because, again, he's working with a new center next to him. He's used to a different voice. So there could have been a misheard communication. There could have been a misheard pass down the line. You know, you have to work end out on those kinds of things, unless you're one of those teams who relies on your guards to make those calls, which rarely happens. But, it's one of those things where there's a lot of things. We're not out there on the line. We're not out there in the call. We don't know what everything was, but in a vacuum, just that to say that he got beat. Yes. But again, he was leaning. He wasn't his full self. He was Derrick Henry jumping over a pile and getting hit in the mouth. Like it's there's some context is key nuance. It is what it is.
Yeah. Context matters. All right. We're going to take our third and final break here. When we come back, we have more good things to hit on, including an unbelievable performance from Joey Sly. What a bounce back. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. A few more good things to hit. Particularly of note was Joey Sly, who had, you know, struggles at the Nissan Stadium scrimmage when he went 2 of 4 in that thing. He struggled a few days before the Nissan scrimmage in camp when he was just missing. He missed like 6 kicks in a row or something, I think, was the report from the beat writers out there.
I heard in the media that they were pulling in kickers left and right to replace him.
Yep, exactly. They had 5 guys in for workouts after, you know, between that. And let's just play Robert Saleh talking about Joey Sly. And before I do, how about Robert Saleh? Again, the aura on the sidelines. When Sly hit that 58-yard field goal, there was nobody on the sideline more pumped, greeting him with more excitement and giving him the most raucous high five, powerful slap to the hand than Robert Saleh, who obviously was happy to see his kicker boot that through. It basically secured the win for the Titans, and obviously that doesn't matter or mean anything. It doesn't matter?
Well, everything matters.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Robert. But still, like, that's how you go execute at the end of the game in a situational scenario where you need this field goal to be made. And I got to eat a little bit of crow because literally on yesterday's show previewing the game, I said Joey Sly's got to be good because the Titans can't afford to have the kicker that's costing them games when they're going up in the same division against guys like Cam Little who can make 70 yarders. So the fact that Sly booted that 58-yard field goal through with no issue at all, in addition to a 55-yarder and a 53-yarder and a 39-yarder, I believe, was the other one. Looking it up really quick to confirm. Yes, 39-yarder.
It was short enough that I went, okay, this is, of course, the one he's going to miss. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact that he made all those kicks, really encouraging for this team to not be in a situation where the kicker is costing them games. Remember the start of the Vrabel era where they went through like 6 kickers in 5 weeks? All right, here's Robert Saleh talking about Joey Sly.
Yeah, Joey, I mean, how about that kid, man? You know, like, had a rough blue and white game in a scrimmage. And
30 years old.
He sees the wire, show a couple of workouts, and shoot, we had a couple of workouts here still on this road trip, and he has an outstanding practice, and he follows it up with a 58-yarder at the end to seal it, and it was perfect with his field goals and his extra points. So, I mean, just outstanding for him.
So that is a very encouraging thing to, you know, Robert Saleh, obviously very happy. Joey Sly was interviewed after the game. I didn't pull any of it because it was kind of boring and silly, but one of the most interesting things, Joey, yeah, he's a kicker. Also a guy who looks like a football player. I mean, he looks like he should be in a bike gang or something. He's got this big beard, tattooed shoulder. Anyway, he talked about how getting back into the swing of kicking when training camp starts is not necessarily easy. I don't think people realize or put enough stock into the fact that Tommy Townsend and him had never played together. Like, this is a new holder. You got to learn a new holder's rhythm, the speed at which you go from your stance pre-snap to your foot swinging through the football matters. And you got to be in sync with your holder. And so he talked about how he's been kicking all off season with the stick that holds the ball for him. It's not real. There's no process. There's no procedure to that. There's no ball is snapped, caught, put down, defensive lineman coming at you trying to block the kick. So getting back into the swing of that took him a second to figure it out. He said he did have some problems missing wide to the right. He said his whole career he's had problems missing wide to the right, but he was able to look at the film, look at his hips and his shoulders and make sure, you know, correct the areas where he's not square to the ball and fix it. And that's exactly what he did. And he said he was having timing issues early on where he would be a little rushed to get to the ball and Townsend doesn't have the ball down yet. Or he'd be a little slow to make sure Townsend has a time to get the ball down. And the fact that he's slow, he's kind of pulling up as he kicks and his hips open up and the ball goes off to the right. So all that to say, he worked out these issues, and it's another little kind of just context reality check that it's like, again, I'll say it. I say it all the time. Not everything has to mean something.
Well, everything matters.
Okay, sure. But not everything has to mean something, because sometimes he's just working through the working out the rust and getting in sync with a new holder, and then you see him go out there and nail his kicks. Cam Ward, first action since he hurt his shoulder, knocking off the rust a little bit. Let's not overreact to every single thing that happens and make it have some big sweeping meaning conclusion, because not everything matters.
Well, everything matters.
Okay, thank you, Robert. So I think that that's how Sly was able to get back on track, was just reps with his new holder in a live game environment in a stadium that he's kicked in before, where he was for a part time the 49ers kicker when their actual kicker was dealing with an injury. So knows the area and went out there and booted through those kicks. He also said that the workouts didn't really have any effect on him. He was like, yeah, workouts are a thing, like they happen, whatever. I know what I can do. I know what I can bring to this team. I just had to get myself right. And he did. He got himself right. Sometimes it's good to make mistakes and fail. And have failures, because that's how you get better. You correct those things that are causing the failures. And that's exactly what Joey Sly did. So he, to me, I agree with the comment that said this earlier, biggest winner of the entire night was Joey Sly, who's, you know, basically saved his job. His job looks secure now. And just encouraging for Titans fans to see him able to hit 350-plus yarders.
Yep. 100%. And I'm not going to pretend like I know how to. What's always funny to me is, like, if I never try to critique punters or kickers, because I've tried to punt and kick in my life, and I've woefully awful at it. In fact, I still do the toe kick for field goals, because I can't figure out, my hip doesn't go that way and my ankle just shatters if I did. But anyway, there's so much that can go wrong. You say he's pushing it right, he has a tendency to do that, but the thing that I felt positive was, he says, let me go back and look at my form, let me go and see. Too many times I've seen kickers, I'm just stick with my process, I'm you know, whatever. He actually said, something's going wrong, let me go back and look. So to me, that tells me he has a personality that he's not going to let things go too wrong, or he's not going to try to, before he goes and tries to make a repair to it. And you got to have a short memory as a kicker, and that's what I think is more positive than anything, is that he was struggling and he didn't let that bother him. He goes out and actually performs. We talked about bullets firing, going and everything like that, how you can speed up mechanics, do all this kind of stuff, and he didn't look like he was doing anything like that at all. So a lot of positives there for Sly.
Yeah, totally agree. Sly is fine. Roster Grids with the comment here. Fans just tend to overreact when serviceable kickers have a bad day. Nobody on waivers right now is going to be a better option. I agree, nobody on waivers right now is going to be a better option. We'll see what happens when cutdown day comes. A lot of teams with two kickers in camp. But I think that Sly did save his job last night. I have a great story about me trying to impress my now wife kicking a football. So our first date, I took her to the NFL holiday party, which was held inside SoFi Stadium in the fall of 2023. Or the winter, I should say. December 2023. And they let us go out on the field. They had these really cool, it was almost like combine style, like play around drills on the field, like you could go throw against targets, and they had a kicking station set up, And I've always been like decently okay at kicking a football. Not great, obviously. I mean, I'm not a kicker, but I'm out there in a suit, full suit, dress shoes, everything. And I want to go show my, again, this is our first date. We're married now, but this is our first date. I want to go show her like, hey, I'm a little athletic. I can like surprise you maybe with my ability to kick a football. I go out there, try to kick this football in my dress shoes. The ball, I don't think, got more than 2 feet off the ground, shanked hard to the left. It was like the worst kick of my life. It was my one chance to show her that I could kick a football. Now, I also did do the throwing drills, and I got the ball. It was like those Dr. Pepper halftime things. Got the ball right through the hole, right in the target. And so that did feel good, but my kicking story was very embarrassing. But you know what? She didn't run away. We ended up getting married, so it all worked out in the end. Ryan, did you observe Femi Ladejo at all last night? Did you see anything from him? The one play that stands out is his tackle for loss down there in the red. I think it was down in the red zone, but a play where he's unblocked. I don't remember where the ball was snapped actually, but it was like a little end around to Stribling they tried. And he just was unblocked off the edge and wrapped it, wasn't fooled by the motion or action, and wrapped him up in the backfield. And I said in our chat that Femi Ladejo unblocked off the edge is the best defender in the league. I mean, the plays he made last year when he was unblocked off the edge and in this game too. But was there more than just the opportunities when he's not, doesn't have an offensive player in his face?
Yeah, he was involved in a lot. I don't know his exact stats. Maybe the chat can call it out, but he had quite a few. He was involved in a lot. He was around the ball. I thought he was pressing down the line when he's supposed to. I thought he was reading things well. I saw a lot of positives again, and defensive line for the most part is not going to get their names called out a lot. Obviously, if you're making the tackles, you're making tackles for loss, you are. But if you think even the good ones get three, maybe two, three, four a game, they're not getting, you know, which is a ton because it is, but it's not their names not getting called out for 40 plays. Like it's easy to say they had a bad game if they're not there, but what you have to go down and look at the film is, were they making the proper reads? Were they making, if their offensive linemen or tight end squeezed down, did they squeeze down with them? They didn't react. Did they not break contain? Which again, you can say he had no one blocking him, but he didn't make a mistake and didn't get lost to contain, which I've seen so many times, even at the NFL level. So it's to me, I thought that he looked like an NFL defensive end in a lot of what he was doing. I think I just saw the chat, six tackles, two total for loss, I think is what he had. So he was involved.
Led the team, right?
He was involved in a lot. So to me, there was so much more than just that one play when you go and look at his involvement. And again, like you stated earlier, just kind of bring all the conversations back around. When you have this kind of a zone defense, you really need your front four to do their jobs and to react and to do things like get up the field, get into their lanes and stay there. And I thought that I saw that both out of Femi and out of Falk, getting up the field and creating some havoc. Now Falk obviously needs some nuance to his game, needs a little more, maybe a secondary move I'd like to see out of him. But the fact that he was able to explode off the line, get that depth, same thing with Femi on a lot of plays and the reads there too. I saw a lot of good things. Again, wouldn't classify them as great or outstanding, but again, they're not bad. Neither one of them, I would say, had a bad game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Keldrick Falk got the start, which was interesting. Obviously, we know Jacob Martin suffered some sort of minor knee injury during Graver, I always thought that was the Neely photo. The Neely photo is my Twitter profile picture, but I do not have it printed out in here. Now, this is me and my wife with our first dog, Bean, little wiener dog. Anyway, Keldrick Falk got the start with Jacob Martin sitting in this game, which, I mean, I kind of expected him to. I didn't think Femi would start over Falk, even though he's a year more in the league. He's more raw than Falk. I talked about this yesterday with the press man coverage guys, but the fact that Falk actually played defensive line in college more than eight games like Femi did, I thought would give him the inside track. So that was good. Last point that I have here, Ryan, and I haven't seen anybody leave a comment in here about other guys they want us to talk about. Here's one. We'll get to it in a second. But anyway, the last guy to talk about here is Tajay Spears, who had the longest gain of the day until Julius Chestnut ripped off a 34-yarder late in the, I think in the like midway through the fourth quarter. Chestnut ripped off a big, nice run, which, you know, preseason Hall of Famer Julius Chestnut. But Tajay Spears, 25-yard run. Now, I think part of this is going against backups. I think another part of it is first game of the preseason where nobody that you're playing against has been allowed to tackle yet, and that the refs or the coaches will whistle a play dead when you like touch a player around the waist or the shoulders. So Tajay Spears like getting in the middle of that pile and not going down, And then all the defenders thinking, oh, the play's over. And then he spins out of it and explodes for a 25-yard gain. I thought that was an awesome play. Overall, he looked good. 4 carries for 35 yards. He did have 3 carries for 10 yards if you take away the long explosive that I do think was created partially by it being the first preseason game against backups. But still, Tajay Spears led the NFL last year in forced missed tackles per touch. His only hangup to being an electric playmaker and massive contributor to the success of this offense is the ability to stay healthy. If he can stay healthy, he's going to set himself up for a nice payday at the end of this year because this is the last year of his contract, and he's going to be a factor on offense. He's going to get the ball in the passing game, and if the usage on those first 3 drives is any indication of what this coaching staff wants to do with the running backs, both of those guys are going to play, and they're going to play a decent amount, and Spears is going to get his chance to carry the ball up the middle and not just be like a perimeter scat back receiving back. So very encouraging performance from the entire run game. Every unit, we can talk about Nick Singleton too if you want, but I thought all the running backs, every single one of them looked good. Kalel Mullings didn't play in this game, still dealing with a hip pointer. But everyone who played at running back looked good, including Michael Carter, who caught a nice play out of the backfield, which was sort of his role with Arizona last year, including running back Will Levis, who had a few nice carries on quarterback draws. Any chance the Titans use Will Levis in a Taysom Hill role this year? Where it's like, just throw him out there for 3rd and short, let him run up the middle, and every once in a while, if you want to, you can let him throw the ball, because he's a quarterback.
A pop ass.
Exactly, yeah. A little Derrick Henry jump pass. Anyway, Spears, what a performance from him. It was really one play, but one very encouraging play.
Well, again, we talk about looking for things like, for running backs for me, did they hit their proper assignment at a speed that you would consider NFL level? And I thought that all the running backs were there. And that's the actual thing I thought. I'm glad Atlas, the funny Atlas, there's two Atlases, but the Atlas 6157 brought up Nick Singleton. I was like, oh, thank you. Because I remember thinking last night during the game that, oh, I want to talk about Singleton with Graver tomorrow. And it completely slipped my mind, because it wasn't that he did anything you would consider world breaking or anything like that. But what I did like was how hard he got, and how he attacked the line and how he looked sure of himself when he was doing that. Like, you see too many guys that get into those spotlights. I remember him from college. That was kind of what he was in college. Like, you're just not going to bring him down with one guy, it seemed like sometimes. And he's a very aggressive runner. And to see that in the NFL game translate, I think that he, behind that starting offensive line that's creating that push, would have done just as well in falling forward. And that's the things with the running backs, and things I always liked with running backs in the past, is that even if you hit him at the line, they're going to fall forward for 2 or 3 yards. And that was kind of what I saw from Nick Singleton. Is like, well, if you're going to get to the line, let's try to push that line. So at least we're talking about 2nd and 7 instead of 2nd and 10. Fall forward, don't fall backwards. And Singleton definitely gave me that vibe. And I thought, okay, that's a good showing from the rookie. To me, playing with the lower ranked offensive lineman, the 2nd or 3rd team or whatever it is in the depth chart, still hitting that and attacking the line like he did. So, but Tajay, again, Spears did it. Pollard did it. The running game as a whole can be probably what I would consider an offensive side great, because they looked from all aspects, from start to finish, preseason game. I get all that nuance, you know, context matters, but the fact that they're doing it in this day's NFL, you have to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to say, hey, we need 3 yards right here. We need 4 yards so we can set up our next play, so that we're not constantly in 3rd and 12. We're not constantly in 3rd and 8. We can maybe have 3rd and 6, 3rd and 5, which is much more manageable. And you do that by having a good running game, because now defenses can't just key on your pass game and sit back and make your rookie quarterback be sped up by pressure and all that good stuff.
Good note here from Ray School too. Singleton needs to massively improve his pass blocking, but as a runner, he's a future lead back. He's definitely, I think, a future tandem leader back, like a 1A, 1B type of situation could develop here over the next few years. And I think Singleton is primed to lead that committee. He did get absolutely blown up in pass pro on one play and got Will Levis sacked. But that's kind of a rookie thing that just happens to rookie running backs.
It's a tale as old as time. Rookie running backs struggle with NFL pass pro because they're not asked to do this complicated read that they do in college mostly. It's why people like Trent Richardson absolutely flamed out, because he couldn't pass block once he gets to the NFL, because, well, bam, I never made him. And it's just things like that. You have a lot of running backs who've never had to do this before. Now they're having to do it before, because when you're in NFL, you've got to be, even if it's a starting running back, you've got to be able to know how to pass protect and do it well. And there's, again, learning new schemes, learning new protections. It's reading reading not only what your running back is reading, but a lot of pass pros, you have to know what the offensive line is reading. So you know what their responsibilities, you know that where their responsibilities end is where your responsibility begins. And if you've got an H-back also in there, that's another level of responsibilities you've got to learn. So you're not just learning your pass pro, you're learning everybody else's. Same for offensive line. You got to know who the backs have. You got to know who the H-back have. You got to know who the quarterback has, because sometimes the quarterback has, this is your guy. You've got to read him, and it's hot if he's coming. So, you know, it's all that kind of rolled into one.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing, Ryan, sorry, you said that Singleton does a great job falling forward and creating that contact when he's hit. Robert Saleh echoed that exact same sentiment in this morning's press conference when he was asked about Singleton's performance. So great coaches think alike, I will say. All right, going to hit a few more stuff here from the chat specifically. Want to talk about, this was a good thing, and I was going to talk about this, but I was also about to forget about it. So thanks, Roster Goods, for reminding me. The Titans don't have another away game until September 27th. They now play their next two preseason games at home. Then they get like a bye between the preseason and the regular season with a Labor Day weekend off. Then they play their first two home games, or the first two games of the season at home, hosting the Jets and the Eagles. So this is pretty cool. I mean, I would like that if I was a Titans player. Over like six straight weeks, basically, where you get to stay home, five or six straight weeks until you have to leave Nashville again.
It's huge.
I want to talk about the linebackers because had some good stuff from the linebacker spot. Definitely wanted to see more from Anthony Hill Jr. from John I or A. And bottom tier collector says, does James Williams look poised to supplant Cody Barton at some point? So interesting note about the linebacker rotation in this game. The starters were Cody Barton, Cedric Gray, and James Williams was the first linebacker into the game alongside those other two guys. Mohamed Diabate, I don't think, played in this game. I'm not 100% sure if that's true, but I think he's dealing with something. And Anthony Hill didn't play until a little bit later on. I think he was out there for maybe the second series, but I'll have to go rewatch it to be sure. But point is, James Williams looks to be ahead of Anthony Hill Jr. right now. Now, James Williams has been making plays at training camp like crazy every day, it feels like. Anthony Hill also has made some plays, had a two-interception day, had a OTAs pick six, and almost had an interception in the joint practice, but wasn't able to bring it in. So he's been making plays too, but he is a rookie, and there's like we've just been talking about how complex the scheme is to learn, especially the coverage rules for a linebacker dropping into coverage and playing in this scheme. It's going to take him a minute to pick up where he's supposed to be, what depths he's supposed to get to, what kind of spacing he's supposed to have. And James Williams is a former safety, so a guy who knows coverage principles, I would say, based on his experience. I thought James Williams was pretty good. I thought Anthony Hill was okay. He played violently and aggressively, which is nice to see. He didn't like jump off the screen on any play, I don't think, but he was around the ball a lot, which is what he did at Texas. And I thought it was a pretty good showing from the linebacking core. I thought Cody Barton was okay too. I mean, Cody Barton did a really nice job getting right in the passing lane on an early, I think it might have been the first 49ers first possession where ball kind of thrown behind Dejon Stribling, couldn't make the catch. If the ball had been put out in front where it should be for Stribling to run through the catch, it would have been in Barton's stomach because he did a great job cutting off that passing lane and forcing a throw behind the receiver. So a nice play by Barton. And Barton got to the quarterback on the first big third down of the game. He just didn't tackle him. So I actually thought Cody Barton played well. Like, yeah, you don't want to miss the quarterback in the backfield when you have a chance to end a drive with a huge negative play like that. But I also think that could be a little bit of like preseason rust. We haven't been allowed to touch a quarterback, and now we're finally allowed to hit him. I'm super amped up to go hit a quarterback. I can finally do it. Oh no, where'd he go? Felt like it was one of those things to me.
I've got a real bad one from that. My playing career, I got clean on a twist, and I was able to go through the quarterback. Quarterback just standing there, not looking at me, and I just like, here we go. I'm already thinking about it in my head. Here's my highlight. Coach is going to replay this in the meeting. This is going to be huge. I'm going to add it to my highlight VHS. Yes, I'm that old because I had to put VHS together for my college recruiting. This is going to be amazing. I go to tackle. I close my eyes and I'm going in. And next thing I know, I'm on the ground. I go, what happened? I watched film. The quarterback saw me last second, just dipped. I'm just like, what happened? You can get amped up. You can get amped up a little bit when those situations, when you are that free and there's a lot of time. And you remember, you're going after an NFL athlete, even if it's Tom Brady or someone that's just a stick in the mud. I mean, these quarterbacks can move really well left to right. It's what they train for. So it's just one of those things. But yeah, you would like to see him make that play, but I thought overall the linebackers were solid. I didn't see a whole lot of like bad play out of them. And you want the run fits to be there, which I saw. And when you're running this offensive or this defensive zone play, you want to see them drop in coverage. Unfortunately, from the live broadcast, it just looks like they drop out of the coverage. So I haven't been able to see the all 22 to see if they were hitting marks or anything like that. But I haven't heard any reports that they were horrible, and I didn't see anything once the play panned to them where they were terribly out of position and things like you spoke about with Barton.
I'm going to take a quick stop down and hit this super chat.
You've got to hit the nope. You know, oh, hit the thing. One.
Courtney Tyree Jones, I will say this. Our new uniforms are beautiful. I think the best in the NFL. That is such a good point. They really look good on the broadcast, the new uniforms, and it was very fun to see them running around. And then we got another one here.
We keeping a book right now.
200 jewels with whatever emoji elicits the text jamming. Thank you very much, Amon. Thank you very much, A Man Seeking Truth. Still don't know what jewels are, but we appreciate your kindness. Jaron Kanick in the Taysom Hill role, says Hershey Forever. This is in response to me saying we should put Will Levis in that role. Jaron Kanick, if you don't know, is the only player on the Titans with the initials JK. After the game, Robert Saleh said JK suffered a pec injury. I had no idea who he was talking about. I had to run my eyeballs over the entire Titans roster looking for somebody with the initials JK before I stumbled across Jaron Kanick, and I'm like, oh, that's JK. JK's hurt. I don't know how bad it is. Pec issues are not good, usually not minor, so kind of sucks for the rookie in this situation. Maybe unclogs the tight end room a little bit. David Martin Robinson, Jaron Kanick, Kylan Granson all maybe competing for that tight end three spot. And David Martin Robinson made a hell of a grab in this game on a play where Will Levis just threw a hospital ball up and said, don't die, friend. And DMR made the catch on that, like, it was like a little corner route down the field, made a nice catch and got absolutely obliterated and popped up celebrating like, I made the catch, you can't. And drew a penalty, automatic first down. Really nice play by DMR there. Impressive toughness, I think, to take a hit like that. Another comment here from Brian Badillo, and honestly, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer this one very well, because I haven't gone back and rewatched it. Did we not see Bishop Fitzgerald, Shad Banks, or Tyron Montgomery? Are they struggling at practice? I don't know if Bishop Fitzgerald got... I'm assuming all these guys played in the fourth quarter. Like, why wouldn't they? You had Hendon Hooker taking snaps. The guy hasn't even taken a rep in training camp in like 3 weeks, and he's out there playing that second half of the fourth quarter. Tyron Montgomery, he's number 80, isn't he? Because if he is number 80, I'm pretty sure. Oh, no, number 80 is Bryce Oliver. Well, look at me. I'm stupid. Yeah, I guess Tyron Montgomery didn't do anything in the game. Bryce Oliver made a nice catch late down the middle. But, yeah, I guess we don't have any notes on these three guys. Ryan, did you have any notes on these three guys?
Nothing. I didn't take notes, so I'm relying on my old memory, and nothing's sticking out in my memory, which is a horrible way to be, so I apologize. But no. I don't remember it, of the receivers, like, I don't remember Montgomery getting in. He could have, but again, when you have receivers that, you know, a lot of those third string, fourth string guys, they're fighting for roster spots and special teams. So you'll see them mostly. I think I heard Mason Kinsey's name called out on special teams blocking play or something like that, which, oh yeah, that guy's still there. Hey. So it's one of those things where you have those, I don't know, he's listed second on the depth chart, but my point stands that sometimes those guys get more involved in the special teams of games, and you don't necessarily see them unless they make like an absolute blindside, you know, pancake block or something in the special teams, or some huge tackle. It's just kind of hard to say, because they could go in for 15 offensive snaps and you'd never notice it because nothing went their way. The runs all went up the middle and they were just blocking on the edge. So, I mean, it for me, just thinking back, there was nothing really that stands out.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't notice them, which is probably not a great situation in the preseason. I do have a couple little thoughts here. Xavier Restrepo had two catches for 16 yards, almost had a third incredible sideline one-handed catch on a ball that was way over his head, and I didn't even think he was going to make an attempt at it, and he just stuck his hand up and almost brought it in. Couldn't get his feet down, and ultimately couldn't grab the ball. Interesting note on Xavier Restrepo. Tell me what you think of this, Ryan. First, let me set it up. Context is, I don't know what the Titans are doing on special teams in these preseason games. If they're running their first team special teams unit out there, if they're trying back into the roster guys to give them an opportunity to play special teams and maybe earn a roster spot. The punt returner in this game was Courtney Jackson. Niners only punted four times, only one returnable, Courtney Jackson. Chim Dike was out there first with the first team and fair caught the ball at the 5-yard line, which, like, okay, I guess. And that ended up being a 95-yard touchdown drive, so maybe it wasn't so bad. But Courtney Jackson returned a punt. Michael Carter and Courtney Jackson both had a chance to return kicks in this game. Carter brought one out for 30 yards, Jackson for 23. So that's my point prefacing this with saying, like, I don't know what the special teams rotation is in these preseason games, what they're really trying to get out of them. I will say, on the very first opening kickoff, Xavier Restrepo is on the kick coverage team as a gunner and almost makes the tackle, but in fact misses the tackle. He's like, fills his lane perfectly, gets down the field in a hurry, defeats a block, and gets right at the returner, and the returner shakes him and gets upfield and ended up being actually a nice return to open the game for the Niners. Xavier Restrepo was this close to making that tackle. I say this for two reasons. Number one, Xavier Restrepo, is he being given a chance to make the team by showing that he can play on the kickoff coverage unit? And number two, does it hurt him that he's the one who was there but missed the tackle? I mean, on the one hand, he did everything right. He got down the field quickly, defeated a block, and got to the ball carrier. On the other hand, he whiffed when he tried to break him down. What do you make of that, Ryan? Anything?
I do not remember which season of Hard Knocks it was, but they had I remember one year in particular, they were really going over, like, it might've been one of the Rams ones out there, where they were going over the special teams guys, pulling them in and getting cut. And one of the things they said was, hey, we really liked you as a receiver, but you're not going to see the field in our current roster situation. So you have to be able to find ways to make this team and contribute. And one of the things they do is, like I just said with those back end guys, is you've got to see, can they be valuable to us? We have them as a backup receiver, but we are also going to need them to play the majority of special teams if they're just going to be a backup and they're just going to be there as an emergency. So yeah, it can hurt if what you're doing is an audition for, yes, I can do this and I can be counted on. And if you miss it again, is it fair that you're judging, like, I don't want to be hypocritical because I say don't judge offensive linemen off of one bad play. But is it fair if you're judging special teams guys off one bad play? Well, no, it's probably not fair, but it's the world you live in when you're that bottom of the roster cut and everything you do is microscoped at that point in time. And so it's may not be fair, but it's what's going on. And that very much could be what's happening with him. I think he was borderline all last year too, if my memory serves. So yeah, they're trying to find a way to get him involved so that they can keep him on the roster or have an excuse to, maybe. The thing I'll say about fair catching within the 5-yard line, that could be instructed because they want to give the offense more space to operate and more plays. So again, there's so much of this that I always think it's laughable when talking heads say, make like in a box judgments on a team after a preseason game and say, this is terrible. I'm like, well, you don't know what they were instructed to do. No one does. And those are things you don't talk about unless they're specifically asked, hey, did you instruct so-and-so, DK to fair catch so y'all can have more? Yes, we did, as a matter of fact. Or no, they don't. That doesn't ever happen. Not really, unless Paul Kaharski's on a side quest. But it's just one of those things where it's, you don't know what they're being told. So there could be a lot of factors in there, but yes, without my ranting here, you have those guys in there that early trying to get them special teams look. So the special team coaches say, hey, I need to take a look at this guy. Let's get him in there early. Let's break this down, because they're trying to make their decisions too. Cause that's a very important part of this game. It's 1/3 of the damn game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Lauren Sebring, any news on Mason Kinsey? LOL. What kind of news are you looking for? You're looking for news on Mason Kinsey? I mean, I don't know. I don't have any news on him. No.
I have no news. Just like, I feel like a dummy after seeing a name in the chat searching the Titan. I actually pulled up the depth chart. I'm like, who is Tyler Rowland? I had no. I was like, what are we talking about? And I pieced it together a couple chats. So I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah. All right. I think we're coming to an end of this stream here. Last little note I'll say is that it was also a big win for a few other reasons in this game. The team got a chance to try and like play an onside kick recovery in a real game situation. That's great work for them. What you're talking about, being backed up at your own 5-yard line, that's great work. Go out there and see if you can put a drive together with terrible starting field position, like 58-yard field goal tries. Like, there were a lot of game situations that you can't really mimic or recreate exactly in practice with the same atmosphere and the same stakes that they got a chance to work on in this preseason game. So overall, a nice game. They won the game. So can Titans fans please stop acting like the sky is falling? Again, I will take a 19-13 win over a 42-40 loss because, like, yeah, sure, your offense scored 40 points, but if you lose the game, does it really matter? And yeah, I want to see Cam Ward be productive, and I want to see him throw touchdown passes, and I want to see him be more accurate and more consistent. And you, like, But just because he wasn't in preseason week one, where he definitely looked jittery, definitely looked speed up, nerves of being back in the live action, just shake off the rust and get out there, make the corrections, and let's not make any sweeping judgments off one preseason game. Yep. We'll make big sweeping judgments off three preseason games, which even that doesn't matter at, like, does it matter at all? Let's ask Robert Saleh if it matters.
Well, everything matters.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Any final thoughts, Ryan?
Yeah, my final thought is this, is that I think that it would be it'd be a disadvantage to think like this, that to take this and say that this is going to be a terrible season or that this is going to be an uber successful season, because you just don't know yet. I think your expectations need to be the same. I don't expect this to be the worst team in the NFL. I think they've made too many improvements across the board. I also don't think this is going to be the best team in the NFL because I just don't think they're there yet. Rebuilds take time, and you have to have solid voices there for a longer time. These are first year guys in a lot of positions. So you have to be able to temper expectations a little bit. I may be a little more reasonable when it comes to that kind of stuff. But again, not to bring in another sport, but the Chicago Cubs, they had a post here recently about how the last 5 years, when they got to 50 losses, they had 36 wins. The next year they were at 45. The next year they were at 60. And this year they're at 71 when they got to 50, or when they were maintained 50. So, I mean, just it takes some time. I know baseball is different, but the same sports are sports. You have rebuilding times. So I think expectations need to be set. This isn't going to be the worst team in the NFL. Probably not going to be the best team. If they go on a miracle run and go Super Bowl, great. You can come back and make fun of me here that I didn't call and I wasn't supportive. But that's just being realistic, that I think that either side of those two equations are unrealistic. Come back to the middle. Join us in reality, in my opinion, a little bit. And I think that this is going to be a more fun, I don't know how to grammar that out, team to watch this year than they were last year. And I'm excited, at least that we could see some comparable football, as opposed to just going, oh great, here we go with another turnover, another three and out, and all this over and over and over again. I'm really thinking it's going to be improved from at least that bad feeling from last year.
Absolutely agree. I will throw some final quick hitting thoughts out there as we wrap this up. First of all, shout out to Curtains JY4CF, who called the Carmona start with solid logic in the comments section recently of our right guard video. Pat yourself on the back, Curtains. You deserve it. Brian Daboll's play calling was really fun to watch, creative and interesting, and not even what, like, it wasn't even, this isn't the scheme.
Still vanilla. That they're, it's still vanilla.
They're not attacking weaknesses that they've seen on film, and they're just running their basic install stuff. A lot of RPOs, which we love to see for Cam Ward. The first third down conversion to Ridley was, I mentioned this, it was on a mesh concept. If you guys have been following this channel for more than a year, you might remember that I did a video called Designing the Perfect Offense for Cam Ward. The thumbnail said The Blueprint on it, and I broke down three concepts that Ward excelled at when he was with Miami, and one of those concepts was the mesh concept. So really nice to see that called on the first third down of the season. Let's go to a concept that we know our quarterback is familiar with and executes well, and he executed it perfectly. So love to see that. I do agree with Roster Grids here that Carnell Tate was held on the goal line on the pass breakup by Ephesian Prysock, and I put that in our group chat, Ryan, that on the play, it was like, that was DPI. Like, come on, give me a break. I do think Cam predetermined that he was throwing to Tate, which I don't love. But again, I think that was sort of a, I want to throw a touchdown to Carnell Tate because he's my new toy and it's our first chance to play together.
Yeah.
But I do agree. He definitely got held on that. Covered this, but I started earlier, so I'll just put it on screen. Cam was inaccurate because he was moving too fast. Yes, Robert Saleh agrees. And this is the other thing. It's like, yeah, there were a few bad plays by Cam. Three misses that he shouldn't have had and a terrible, terrible, terrible intentional grounding penalty. But bottom tier collector, let's not forget, Cam Ward had some decent throws too. He threw a rope to Robinson in a window on a third down and long inside his own, like 5 or 10. Like, yeah, he did make some plays. I think this might have been the play after the intentional grounding to get that yardage right back. They couldn't convert it on third down there, but I mean, it wasn't the worst thing ever. And to go back to this one from Atlas, how did Cam have an entire offseason to only focus on his footwork due to the shoulder injury and look more inaccurate than ever? I think we can really sum it up by saying that he was just a little jittery and a little over anxious and didn't get a chance to settle into the game. And when you only play three series, you don't get a chance to come back.
I need to see more game time. I don't want to make any harsh decisions on him. Footwork, I think, looked fine. You could tell he'd been working on it. So, I, you know, you sit here and not this throw, but you look here in a second, I saw on one where he's able to set his back foot and that one right there, you see the drive through the ball stepping through, you want to see that toe point in his direction. It's just everything else. Like the arm slot there was different. The arm slot here was different. There's some things going on there where his arm was different, but you see the footwork here, watch him step through, watch him plant. And that ball is out. Like if you notice that front foot hit ball out, I mean, that's what you want from there. And then this ball, I mean, we didn't miss by much. I mean, it's just,
right.
It's they need more reps. I think it's just a little bit outside, but I've watched quarterbacks that are considered MVPs every year make that same bad throw, but miss that throw. So, I mean, just in a vacuum, we didn't have enough to go love him to see that he get this a little more, but he could also be working out the timing of a new receiver.
Right. I think a miss on an out route is hard to judge whether it's the quarterback, the ball went a different place from where the quarterback was intending it to go. Versus like, oh, the receiver didn't get there. I thought he was going to be there by then, but he got held up at the line of scrimmage. The Niners corners were jamming these guys at the line of scrimmage. Could have been the same situation on the Iron Man miss on the slant too. Is, you know, like, come on. Is look at all this congestion that Iron Man is running through as he's coming out of it to try to catch this ball. And he's like, looks like he's trying, almost was held a little bit. Like there could this. I do think like the first miss on the screen was horribly inaccurate. That's just a Cam trying to like, look how quickly he's like shuffling his feet to try to get the ball out. He just went too quickly. Yeah. But these other two, they do look like accuracy misses, but there is an argument to be made that there are just timing issues with the receivers. So not panicking, not overreacting to anything that happens in a preseason game and celebrating the first Titans win of the 2026 season. Ryan, we got to celebrate these things. Because we've only had 6 real wins in the last 2 years. I know we've had a lot of preseason wins in that time. But I'm celebrating the preseason win because we may not have many chances.
Positives are always better than negatives.
Exactly. And that will do it for this one. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you haven't liked the stream yet, that means you hate me. Personally, I'm taking it as a personal attack. If you don't like the stream, you know, all it does is it allows other people on YouTube to see that this might be a good show that they might enjoy. YouTube takes however many likes a video has and puts that into its recommendation algorithm. And so the more you like this stream, the more help you do for the show and you help us grow and find new audiences. So like the stream. Yes, I beg for it on every episode that I'm live because that's what you do. We're at 90 likes right now, 183 of you. So only half of you liked it. Like, come on, like the video. As soon as the stream ends, remember to leave a comment. Just tell us, what was your favorite aspect of the game? What is your biggest concern coming out of this game? We will be back. I will be back with Justin Mello on Monday to talk about the Titans' Saturday practice. We'll see what the rest of the schedule looks like for them. Joint practice next week against the Seahawks, I think, is going to be Thursday, maybe Friday. Depends how the schedule shakes out. Titans' next preseason game is at home against the Seahawks next Sunday night. So, see you guys on Monday. Big thanks to Ryan. I'm trying to get Ryan back on more often than once a year because really appreciate his insights. Thank you, Ryan, for sitting here with me for
anytime. Anytime,
105 minutes. Holy cow, was this a long stream or what? So appreciate everybody. We'll see you next time. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.